coming up are ways you and your spouse can grow even closer starting today. That's on today's Focus on the Family. Stay with us.
Because at the end of my life, and my hope is that Aaron will be able to say, you know what? Greg made a difference in my life. Like being married to Greg made a difference in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a bad
that's
way.
That's a good goal.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
I that's my goal, is to know that I made a difference in your life and improved your life.
Well, that's part of a panel discussion that we introduced last time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and we got lots of good marriage advice and encouragement from our guests, Jean Daly and her husband Jim, of course, along with Greg and Naren Smalley.
John, it was, I thought, a great conversation last time, exploring themes like navigating our differences as couples, the value of mentoring, and why it's important to have a long view of marriage. It kind of slows the burn of anger or disagreement down quite a bit. Jean and I had so much fun trading stories and insights with Greg and Aaron. The Smalleys head up our marriage team here at Focus, and I really appreciate the wisdom they have for husbands and wives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the source material for this conversation came from a book that, Jim, you've written called The Healthy Marriage Devotional, 365 Daily Inspirations to Bring You Closer Together. And now, the continuation of that roundtable conversation between Jim and Jean Daly and Greg and Aaron Smalley on today's Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
All right, let's explore some of the things that married couples can do to improve their relationship. That's the whole idea here, right? But you've written a book, Greg, about tools. Now, what's so funny, I resonate with this because I am not mechanically inclined.
Normally.
Yesterday, we talked about me rescuing the ring that Jean lost when taking the toilet apart. I never found the ring. I had to put it all back together.
Impressive.
I think it didn't leak, but I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
But the point is, so I'm cruising through one of those big box stores, and they got a sale for a massive toolbox. And it's like love at first sight.
You've got to have it.
I'm looking at it going, that just is so beautiful.
Every guy needs a good
tool. Yeah, so I bought it. You know, it was on sale. It was a good deal. And it stands like 8 feet tall. You can barely get to the top drawer. And I filled it with ratchets and everything I need, you know, socket sets galore, metric, standard, you got it.
Hammers.
I'm not sure that I've ever used one over the last 15 years.
But you have them. That's
but I
the
have
point.
Them. Yeah. My sons case. Have used it. But you did this whole concept about the toolbox and what our wives need, the tools that we need to use for our wives. It's not the socket set.
No.
So what are the tools that our wives need us to use, and how are we as clumsy with those tools as I was with real tools?
So my son-in-law calls me last night, and so they're looking to buy a home. It's their first purchase, and so he calls in and goes, "Hey, do you have a toolbox?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Because we're going to need help." And he goes, "Do you know how to use those tools?" And I went, "You know I don't." I'm like, "Why? You know this. Why are you even asking me?" He's like, "All right. Would you be willing, at least, if I tell you how to use it to help us when we
But what a humbling moment. Your son-in-law telling you how to use tools.
Because the only, like you, the tools that I have is because my dad passed away and I inherited all his wonderful tools that he knew how to use. He never taught me.
Yeah, that's the reason. It's your dad's fault.
Right there. This is exactly his fault. I think there's some incredible tools as a guy that we need to know and learn how to use for our wives. Probably my favorite is what I'd call the safety tool. Mm. Because more than anything in our marriage, so of 33 years, what I've learned is that if Erin's really going to let me see who she really is, if she's going to open up and reveal all of who she is, so her, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the hurts, the wounds, all that stuff, she will only do that if she feels safe with me. Like, people won't open and really reveal who they are if they don't feel safe. And I never had that vision of what does that really mean? In other words, safety being that, Aaron, I accept all of who you are. It's like Ruth and Boaz from the Old Testament. If you reread that story, what's so cool is that Boaz, everything he did in their love story was to create safety. It was helping her to feel safe. Like, this was a a foreigner who came into his country, and she was trying to pick up grain and wheat, and he's seen her do this, and he's telling his guys, you know, you do not mess with her. You leave her alone. As a matter of fact, I want you to leave behind some good stuff, just not the stuff that no one wants. And every time that he interacted with her was all to make her feel safe. Mm-hmm. And that launched their love story. She fell in love with that man because of the safety that he created. Mm-hmm. And so that's a powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And so ask each other, when we figure out how to be safe, so we can ask each other, I can ask Aaron, hey, what is it when I do it helps you to feel safe? Mm-hmm. Maybe I should ask you right now. What do I do that helps you to feel safe?
You know, it's interesting. It's something we talked about yesterday on the program. When you listen to me, when you just sit with me and care about my emotion, I feel so safe because you're with me. I'm not alone in it.
And it's that's one tool. Mm-hmm. You know, another one is the tool of knowledge. I love in 1 Peter 3:7, it says to treat your wife in an understanding way. That word understanding, another definition there is knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. So treat your wife in a knowledgeable way. In other words, get to know her. She's always changing. Mm-hmm. There's always something to know about Aaron. I think the worst attitude in a marriage we can have is that I know you, 33 years of marriage. Like, I know you, I know everything there is to know about you. Mm-hmm. But that's such a lie, because she is always changing. And so that tool of being willing to keep asking her questions and
being curious.
Yeah, like we here at Focus, we created this huge, like hundreds and hundreds of questions that couples can ask each other, all in that spirit of being curious to increase our knowledge. Mm. And so that tool of just learning about my wife is such an important part of our marriage.
And Aaron, there's one important bit of advice for wives. We're told to affirm our husbands, but you know, that is not easy when they're not affirming
us. Hey, you're asking that question with such energy. What are you talking about?
She was going to say it's not easy when he never does anything worth affirming.
I love the empathy that you're expressing.
Yes. Well, so why is it important for women to take the initiative in this area?
Mm-hmm. And you're right that so often as wives, as women, we're going, well, wait, what about us? Right. We're supposed to do this for them, to affirm them, to encourage them. And the bottom line is we have such great influence. And so if we want that in return, we can absolutely offer that and model the behavior that we want. But for a man, it's interesting because so often I assumed that Greg was getting affirmed here at Focus at work. Like, you know, that Jim, you would compliment his vest and say, gosh, I really love your vest. Versus Gene walked in today and I said, oh my word, I love that color on you. That's awesome. And men just don't tend to do that. As women, we do that. And the research shows that a man that is affirmed by his wife once a day, just one time per day, actually has deeper satisfaction in the marriage. And when I read that research, I was like, I have time to do that one time a day. If that's going to encourage him to enjoy our marriage more, I can do that.
You might be able to get two in there.
Maybe. But that means we have to be watching for what is it that we love about them? What do we see in them? What can we call out in them? And again, as we do that, you're influencing. That is the greatest influence we can hold on to, modeling the behavior we want to see.
Yeah. And I know, like, Jim, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, I want to feel successful. I want my person, I want Aaron to notice these things that I do and to feel successful. And that's why I mean, just like last weekend, she's been bugging me to clean out. We have a basement. There's a bedroom. It's been one of those, you know, catch-alls. So it just has all this stuff.
You want me to help you?
Right.
Yeah. I can do that for you.
There is a toilet in there that probably needs to be undone.
I'll just throw everything away, if that's okay.
Just flush it all. Yeah.
So she's been on to me to, hey, please just clean that out. You do that really well. And which I think she makes up just to get me to do it. And I'm like,
she was sincere there. Oh, you do.
So I finally did it. And I got to tell you, it looked really good. And so the first thing, when I finished, I marched right upstairs. Aaron, you got to come look at this. Drag her down. Look. And just present this whole thing that I did. And I'm sitting there going, I am a grown man. Why is it that I have to go and fetch my wife, my person, to let her inspect and to see and to notice what it is that I did.
That's not
and
a problem.
Think, right, but I think it's that longing. Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, you get it.
I get it.
But yeah. It's just, but I've noticed that. That's why when she affirms me, oh my goodness.
Yeah. But often what I hear from couples when I'm working with them, the wife will say, why does he make such a big deal about the things he does? I mean, I'm doing all kinds of stuff, but I think there's something, exactly what you're saying, recognizing what's he really wanting. So if he's announcing, look at what I did, what's really the desire under the waterline? And like you're saying, I want to be successful. I want to be seen for who I am and what I do.
I want you to
affirmation.
To affirm and then give me a treat.
Now we do that. We do that with the garage. Now I'll clean up the garage.
Yes.
It looks good. It's been a while since I've done that. I mean, I take everything out. Nice. I spend 8 hours on this thing. Oh yeah.
Yes.
And then I go get Jean. I said,
you
Jean,
just got
look
to.
At this. Or she just comes out and goes, wow, this is incredible. Then like 3-4 months later, it's a different call. It's like, hey, Jean, can you come out to the garage with me for a minute? What happened?
Yeah. Why is this completely undone?
It's my catch-all.
Yeah. Yes. But you're right. There is something powerful. As much as we talked about, here's the toolbox for the guy. That's a huge one for husbands is to get that affirmation.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned something I want to just come back to because it was really quick, but it's so powerful. You know, you didn't say it quite like this, but it was what's happening for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't exactly how you said it, but that's so much of marriage and so much of the conflict. Yeah. You know, our mutual good friend, Gary Thomas, you know, I was coming to the conclusion, very similar to what he wrote about. And then I interviewed him and he articulated it so well.
He just does it.
But this idea, you think of marriage and you're thinking back to what we said yesterday, you know, you think you're very similar and then you realize you're probably opposites because that's what attracts us.
It's the beauty of marriage.
And that's fine. Yeah. You know, an introvert with an extrovert, that's what attracts you, that opposite of what you are. Yeah. And you get married and then you just end up grinding over those things that are the differences. Yeah. And, you know, Gary said it this way, and I totally agree. You know, in the end, the institution of marriage is to make you more like Christ. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, what? That's where every Christian should lean in.
Yeah.
What do you mean? To become more selfless like him. This is God's character developing us to be more like him. Yeah. And wow, that did change my perspective. I try to remember that, that idea that I need to lay my life down.
Yeah.
I need to be selfless in these things. It's kind of what you were saying, Greg, about knowing your wife completely, knowing her as well as you can. It's very similar because when you do, you know those things that hurt her. You know those things that trouble her, that bother her. The problem is that we just have such a propensity to push those buttons.
Right.
And I don't even understand why.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it's accidental.
Yeah, let's say it's a lot of accidental button pushing.
Yeah.
Well, that may be true for you. I'm not so sure for me. Some of that just feels like it's a standing on the rail, like we talked last time about your laundry thing. And you want to drop the laundry 3 floors.
Yeah, just to make a little point.
Just get it close. And then you ended up hitting her.
Yeah.
That's a metaphor for what I'm talking about. It's like verbally we're dropping that bag of laundry all day.
And it's back to that James 4:1. It's when we don't understand what's below the waterline. What is really driving the behavior in that moment? Am I willing to step back, take a moment to go, okay, what is going on for me? Why am I so upset that Aaron, you know, made her one last little comment like we talked about? Like what why?
Right.
Well, I mean, now looking back, you know, all these years later, I was a middle child. And nothing was ever fair. And so the fact that she set a boundary and then violated it just wasn't fair. It was unjust, right?
Right.
And she needed to know that wasn't right.
Jane's a middle child too. See? And she's right with you.
Right.
And there might be different ways to let me know
There were many, but I think your point is that we react in these knee-jerk ways without taking a moment to go, okay, I'm feeling stirred up. What's that about?
Okay, like, think of the stupidity of this.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I'm saying this boldly. I'm saying it to myself.
He just called me stupid.
Think of the stupidity of this. You know, I'm going to say something that lights your fuse.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, really, right. Why? What benefit is that to you? The person saying it.
Yeah, well,
and I do it company. Like every day. Yeah, right. I say something and whoop, lights Gene up and I'm going, okay, that was stupid. Why did I say that? Sometimes it's your style. I mean, my backup style is verbal attack. Yeah. So I've got to control that. I just can't let it go.
Yeah.
Well, in those moments we're triggered, our hearts closed, we're heading into fight or flight, we're not thinking clearly, and we just say things, do things in a reaction mode. So it's not well thought through. So that's why it's so important, like Greg, you were saying, to step back and go under the waterline. What is going on for me that I want to say this cruel thing to the person that means the most to me in this world? And when we do that, we can get our heart back open. We can de-escalate, and then we can come back and have a different conversation.
Well, here's the ridiculous part. So just the other night, so we were doing something, it was late, and no one had eaten, so you were exhausted, so you went into the bedroom, and I thought, I'm going to cook us dinner. And so, like Gene, we talked about yesterday, you know, I like to follow the recipes, and so I was trying to organize and get everything ready, so I had all this chicken ready to go, and rice, and I went in to ask Erin, hey, would you like some broccoli with the meal I'm about to cook? And so she goes, no, that sounds terrible. And I so
did
reacted
she say
to her.
Time out. Is that true?
Just like that. I was shocked he was cooking dinner. I was like, what? You're cooking dinner? I would come help, but I didn't know you were cooking dinner.
So whatever she said, and she, there was no malice. There was no ill intent.
Nothing but malice.
Nothing that Erin was trying to do. But I just, I kind of yelled out, oh, fine. And then shut the door to the bedroom and just went and sulked in the kitchen. And so a lot of the times we do these reactions, you know, I wasn't planning on doing that. I didn't want to treat her that way.
You were doing something good.
So regardless, none of my reaction that was not right. And so a lot of this stuff, though, is learning the importance of coming back around and repairing. Because most of this stuff, we're going to get wrong. We're not going to do it right in the beginning. And are we committed to coming back around and repairing that conversation and reconnecting?
So, Gene, this is a tender question. There was a time in your marriage where you didn't feel like you were a good enough wife. And, of course, we've all been there. I've been there. What were you thinking and feeling at the time? And then how did Jim handle your heart?
That was early on, like a year into our marriage or 2 years.
Yes, probably 3 years, actually. And there was a lot going on. We had made a major move. Jim had made a career change. I had a job change. There were significant things going on with one of my brothers. My workplace was really unhealthy. And we had left the move. We had made some really sweet friendships as couples.
That's hard.
And a couple of those, two of the women, they were my friends, but they were really mentors to me. They'd been married longer and had children. And, you know, the honeymoon period was over and the newlywed period had
passed. It hasn't ended for me.
Jim's off riding his motorcycle, who knows where.
As I look back, I was feeling emotionally isolated. And our marriage was not good. We did not know how to talk to each other. We didn't bring those tools into our marriage. And I remember one night we were laying in bed, probably as far apart as possible in the bed.
Without falling, rolling off.
Was the pillow wall
And it was
there.
A twin bed.
Well, and a few cats in the middle.
That was the problem.
But I started crying in bed. And Jim, do you want to share what?
Well, I mean, I didn't understand what was happening. You know, there is that male.
Did you lose your wedding ring?
Yeah, I did.
Well, there's that male obliviousness, you know, that you're not as tied in. I mean, she, even hearing her articulate those things that we were facing, that she was facing, I was not clued into any of that which is terrible when you think about it. Yeah. And so I just felt like, man, what is she melting down about? And, you know, so I just remember saying, you know, that, well, divorce won't be an option, so we got to figure out how to do this better then, kind of matter of fact. Yeah. And, you know, that was many years ago, 38 years now. And, you know, we're still working on things, which is what you do. But, you know, I think we've had an incredible life and a great run together.
So when, so in those moments, though, so coach us guys. So tears, crying in the bed, like what... What is it that your hope? What is your hope in that moment? Like how do we show up? It's a crying out, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say, Jean, for you?
In that moment, and I did say to Jim, I don't feel like I'm a good wife.
Right.
You know, I felt like a failure as a wife. I felt like our marriage was failing. And what I needed, and Jim did assure me that, you know, I'm here for you. Divorce isn't an option.
Let's figure this out together.
Yeah. So what I needed was empathy.
Not to feel alone.
Not to feel alone. And that partnership and that reassurance, we're going to make it. Let's get some resources, some help, and we're going to figure this out together.
I love that. There is something about just in those moments. Again, will you be there for me? And I love, Jim, how you showed up in that way. I know God's been, the verse that he's had me just kind of locked into lately is Ephesians 5, 26 and 27. Which has always been super confusing because it says to make her holy. So this is Paul talking about Jesus and his bride, the church. So to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing of the water through the word, to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. Like I read that and go, okay, yeah. Like I don't connect with any of those words. And so historically, I would see that. Here I'm the marriage guy, the VP of marriage at Focus, and I would just go, okay, I'm sure it means something, whatever. But I finally went, I probably should figure out, why is this even here?
Yeah,
and what is so cool is that all this verse is really saying is that Jesus, as husband to the church, what he's doing is he's nurturing her to help her become the best version of who God created her to be. Like he's unlocking all these gifts and talents and now helping her to become that best version to release her. Because you think about what Jesus ultimately did with the church through the Great Commission is he unleashed his bride, the church, into this world who so desperately, needed a savior. And when I finally understood that, that was a huge paradigm shift for me because it made me go, you know what? Why we do all this stuff, why we use the tools and create the safety and sacrifice and all this stuff as a husband, it really is to help our wives. So for me to help Erin become that best version to see how God's going to unleash her. Every time that you showed up and you comforted, you know, Jean, you looked for the ring somewhere in the toilet that was lost. Like, I think that's all done to help her become that best version. Kind of because at the end of my life, man, my hope is that Erin will be able to say, you know what? Greg made a difference in my life. Like being married to Greg made a difference in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a bad
way. That's a good goal.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
That's my goal is to know that I made a difference in your life and improved your life.
Yeah.
Well, Greg and Erin and my lovely Jean, it was so good to have this chat with you the last couple of days.
So fun. Yeah.
Well, we hope the conversation today with Jim and Jean Daly and Greg and Erin Smalley has been encouraging for your marriage. It's certainly our goal to help you and your spouse have a strong, healthy relationship, and the collective wisdom of those two couples was significant and very practical, so we trust you've been encouraged. Now, one way to follow up and to make sure that you're making intentional steps in your relationship to grow closer is to get a copy of Jim Daly's book, The Healthy Marriage Devotional, 365 daily inspirations to bring you closer together. You'll find that at most bookstores or online retailers. Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
Looking for support on your parenting journey? Explore free videos from Focus on the Family Australia at familycast.com.au, filled with encouragement, wisdom, and practical tips for every stage of parenting.